I have no comment.
I'll take that as a maybe. GRT Gaming Podcast, episode 373, recorded on January 3rd, 2015.
Hello, and welcome to the 373rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 206th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Nova.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes lessons in gaming history.
No. I forgot to include gaming history. I was too lazy to change that line.
And includes occasional retrospectives on the year in game.
But, you know, some of this news might have a special meaning for you.
For me personally?
For me personally, yes, because of your nationality.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
But before we do that, what have you been playing?
Oh my God, I got Disney's Infinity for Christmas.
Oh, okay. Now, before you move on, now there's Disney Infinity 2, but that's just Disney Infinity with extra stuff, right?
You kind of have to upgrade if you have one and you want to keep playing it.
Well, that's what I meant. You know, it's just basically Infinity 1, but they upgraded it.
Yeah, the only thing that doesn't work is the Cars World, Monsters World, Incredibles World, and Lone Ranger World that they came out with last year. So it's basically like, it's like a car, basically. You kind of have to change it. Or an iPhone. There, it's like an iPhone. You have to, you know, some things will carry
That's
over.
Not a positive, just so you know.
I know. But in order to use any of the Marvel figures or none of the stuff that they came out with this year is backwards compatible to last year.
Okay.
So if you like Thor and the Marvel characters, Baymax, Donald Duck, Aladdin, if you wanted any of those figures, you can't use them on the 1.0 platform. Okay. So which to me was just like, well, that's really a no-brainer. I like, we just go with the new one.
You know, I might as well ask, was Santa good to you this year?
I got in Disney's Infinity and Tinkerbell and Aladdin.
Are those the figures?
Yeah, those are the figures for Infinity. So yeah, Santa was very good to me.
Were those the ones?
I was invited to Palm Springs, and I think I had the best Christmas that I've had, except, you know, with the exception of being with my family. I think I've had the best Christmas I've had in like 5 years.
Okay. Now, did you want Anna or Elsa, or you know, any characters?
I went afterwards, and I took a trip to the toy store. And I got me that Anna and Elsa double pack. And I got me a Sorcerer Mickey. And I got me a Baymax. And I got me a Captain America. And they all still sitting in the boxes because the starter pack comes with so much content that I haven't devoured it all yet.
Right. Okay. Well, how do the figurines look anyway?
Oh my God, they look awesome. But if anybody's thinking of getting into it or is unaware, for informational purposes, I will mention that when buying the Disney Infinity figures, you do have to look at each one very closely because they're all hand-painted, and sometimes there are unfortunate variations.
Well, here's the thing. With Skylander, sometimes you have bonus silver characters and gold characters, you know, like limited edition characters that are hidden in each box, you know. Is that the case with any of the Disney stuff? Is there a chance you might get a special edition that you didn't that isn't advertised in the box? It's just like, oh look, you got lucky. You got, you know.
No, all of the editions of figures are, you know them before you buy them. So while there are limited crystal figures,
well, that's what I meant.
You do see them, but you do see it before you purchase it.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I had to go and make sure. To purchase the 1.0 version of Mickey because that was the non-crystal version. And I like crystal versions don't really appeal to me.
Oh, okay.
So this year's edition of Mickey is crystal and last year's is regular. So I had to go.
So are you going through the content with one character, then you're going to try to go through the content with another character or?
Well, right now I'm trying to get Thor up to max level.
Okay.
And he's at level 18 already.
Okay.
But I've kind of already run through the Avengers playset. So So now I'm like working on all the bonus content, and it's a little bit slow going.
Okay. So is Disney Infinity, is it open world or what? Or is it?
I'm not really sure how you.
Or is it like Toy Story 3 toy box? Remember the toy box from Toy Story 3?
Yeah, there's a toy box mode. Okay. But that's not the exclusive. So, focus.
Okay, let
game.
Me put it this way. So you have different worlds, and each of those are mini worlds, which are sort of open world.
Kind of. Each of the playsets, and there are three this year. There's Avengers. There's Avengers. There's Spider-Man, and there's Guardians of the Galaxy. So each one of those uses only figures from their own world, so to say.
Okay.
So only the Avengers can live in the Avengers playset, only Spider-Man, etc. With a few exceptions, which you can earn. I figured out that I can get the raccoon guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, which I still haven't seen, into my Avengers world because I earned that privilege by finding coins and whatnot. But aside from that, like, all you could do is, you know, try to complete those challenges with the Avengers themselves. So that was like, I don't know, a good 20 hours worth of content right there.
Did you have Infinity before? Is this the first time you're playing Infinity?
This is the first time I have Infinity, and I got it for the Wii U. And I'm not sure if I'm missing out on a four-player functionality, because that is not available on the Wii U, unless you network with over another system.
I wonder if you could link your 3DS with it.
You cannot.
Oh, okay.
You can, however, use the Wii U's tablet to play normally. I know some games you can't do that, but Infinity you can. God damn it.
Okay. As for me, I got a few hundred dollars in checks and gift certificates and all that, like $50 off from Amazon. And I didn't get any video games. I already got my toys already. You know, I bought my toys well in advance of...
No video games for Christmas, you deprived child.
No. People rather I trust my taste to me. And I already bought my gifts for myself, right? So the thing that I bought...
Oh, I've heard that about you.
Okay. The thing is, I bought, with the $50 gift certificate, Pinnacle Studio 18 Ultimate. So...
Now, I have to say, I was not particularly looking forward to Christmas until a friend of mine was like, I'm buying you a Christmas present, and unless you write Santa a letter of the things that you would actually enjoy receiving, you're going to end up with whatever Santa decides to
give
you.
Which involves socks and sweaters.
Yeah, pretty much. So I was like, okay, and you know what? Like, so I came up with this whole list of, like, ranging from, you know, organize a day to play werewolf to, which would be free, to a $2,000 Red Arrow costume.
Wow.
So it was just
Red Arrow, is that like from the show?
Yes. So it was just the simple act of organizing for myself a list of the things that I wanted to buy for myself this coming year when I, you know, am no longer freelancing. Just that simple act of organizing my thoughts made me feel a lot less stressed out, and I was able to enjoy Christmas knowing that I was going to get hopefully something on my list, you know, like my $10 Jack Frost ornament,
right,
or whatever. It was just the surprise, the suspense. It really all kind of got me into the Christmas spirit.
The Screen Actors,
not that I thought somebody was going to buy me a $2,000 costume, but
the Screen Actors Guild sent me some gifts as too. Well, they're trying to bribe my vote. So they sent me movies like Birdman and The Theory of Everything and that Robert Downey Jr., Robert Duvall film, you know, where he plays a lawyer and there's a judge, you know. So I saw Birdman and I was, you know.
I saw Birdman in theaters. I had the same reaction.
You know, I get what they're trying to do and I get, but, you know, it's so freaking pretentious.
I like the creative camera work, but you're absolutely right. It is extremely pretentious and the story isn't interesting enough to warrant all of that attention.
Well, the thing is that you have a scumbag. You know, Michael Keaton's a scumbag. What's his face? Oh, damn, I forgot. Ed Norton is a scumbag. His daughter's a scumbag. Everybody's a scumbag in the film, and you really don't feel for any of them, even though you're supposed to feel for the Michael Keaton character. But I just wanted to smack him in the face because he's an asshole. You know, I don't care about any of the characters. You know, I did like the point that was made mid-film, near the end of the film, when he said that, you know what, if I do this, your hearts will race, and he snaps his fingers, and then you have this science fiction epic going on, right? You know, and it's sort of like, yeah, that's what happens. You know, you're in a talkie film. You know, you're enjoying it or not enjoying it or whatever. But, you know, all you need to do to get a crowd's pulse racing in a good way is just to have a science fiction film just blaring around you. You know, did you not feel a little bit of a release when all that stuff started happening on the screen? You know, when you were in the middle
No,
of
not really, because I liked it better when I thought he had magical powers and that his whole big thing was trying to keep them And then it was just like, oh, he's simply hallucinating because he's crazy.
Yeah, spoilers, everybody. He's it's all in his head. Although I found it interesting, I would have found the movie worthwhile. And again, spoilers, if you know, when he jumps off the roof and he has that fantasy about flying, if in fact he killed himself, you know. And,
yes, because then the movie would have been over.
No, it wasn't that it would be over.
Earlier.
It would just have a point, you know. But then again, it just went into creativity and all that. And you know, I just wanted to smack. I thought, you know, Michael Keaton and Ed Norton were going to have sex at one point.
Please don't vote for it. That's my point. Don't vote for it.
I haven't seen The Theory of Everything yet. It's gotten a lot of great reviews. And basically, it's about Stephen Hawking before he became too, you know, when he was still able to stand, you know, and walk around. And he didn't, you know. So that I'm sort of – the thing is that also – I watched it on my 4K TV, which was basically my big Christmas present, you know. And again, it turned it into like I was watching a TV show rather than a movie, you know. So it had that weird thing, you know. And, you know, people liked the score, but after a while, I just got the constant drumming just enough. Okay, we get it. Thank you. So anyway, that was the movie review portion of our
Seriously. Podcast.
Anyways, what I've been playing is just a lot of NBA 2K15, and I also did a playcast with Dan playing Civilization 5. And what happens is that we play Civilization 5, a short game, with other people, you know, in a multiplayer situation, and we talk, and they record the conversation, and they release it as a podcast. You know, they edit it down, you know. So what happens is that people, you know, listen to us talking while we're playing. So I'm pretty sure it's entertaining to listen to. I'm not going to, but you know, I mean, we do have a crossover with the Polycast, so they'll probably be listening to me playing Civilization V. And once again, I use colorful metaphors.
Okay.
You watch
This is a family program.
Yeah, I was about to say, did you see, what's it called, Star Trek 4? Spock says, do you think it's time for a colorful metaphor? Anyways, we're going to move on to the first item. Go ahead, Paul.
FBI claimed to be investigating Xbox Live, PlayStation, and PlayStation Network DDoS perps. And this comes to us from R-Technica. The FBI is reported to be investigating the police... Let's try that again.
The police are investigating.
Okay. Yes. The FBI are investigating the police. The FBI is reported to be investigating the people responsible for the denial of service attacks that rendered Microsoft's Xbox Live and Sony's PlayStation Network inaccessible for much of Christmas Day, according to sources speaking to the Daily Dot. A group calling itself Lizard Squad has claimed responsibility for the Christmas attacks. The group has raised its profile over the Christmas period by speaking with a variety of media outlets, including BBC Radio 5 Live and Sky News. Talking to Win Beta, a group member said that the denial of service attacks were being done to demonstrate poor security on the part of Microsoft and Sony. The Lizard Squad members called themselves Ryan Clearly, after Ryan Viral Clearly, the LewSec caliber impersonated for hacking the possession of child pornography. And that's just a poor choice, in my opinion. And Veen Omari. They claim that their denial of service attacks used undersea routers that total 1.2 terabytes per second of data flooded the gaming networks. Ryan is reported to be 16 or 17 years old, living in Finland. He claims that this gives him protection against U.S. law enforcement agencies due to Finnish law protecting, providing protection against extradition. The Christmas attacks were apparently stopped after Kim.com offered the group vouchers for 500 gigs for 1 year on his mega-encrypted storage service valued at $99 each. .com told the Lizards that the vouchers would be converted to lifetime ones, providing that the group continued to refrain from attacking their services. .com gave the group 3,000 of the vouchers, and they claim that they are being sold for $50 each. Microsoft and Sony have said little about the attacks, though Sony has acknowledged that there was an attack. Oh, good for them. They're changing. Both networks now appear to be working fine. With the games' networks offline, the group now claims that it is attacking the Tor network instead. It is not immediately clear, however, if the current Lizard Squad members are the same Lizard Squad that conducted a string of similar denial-of-service attacks on gaming servers over the past few months. A competing group calling itself The Finest claims that they have doxed Lizard Squad's members in mid-December, and a number of Twitter accounts claimed to belong to Lizard Squad members went silent around the same time, and some Lizard Squad Twitter accounts were suspended. However, Ryan and Vinny have laughed off The Finest's claims that they are that the information in the doxing was either, quote, extremely outdated or straight up raw.
Yeah, one problem I have is basically these people giving away vouchers for 500 gigabytes for a year and Mega and them selling it, you know, isn't that sort of like giving it to terrorists and paying the ransom?
They didn't do it for a ransom, though. Like, I don't think they claimed.
Yeah, they're bribed
to be looking for anything.
They were bribed, so basically they're paying.
They were bribed, right? So it wasn't giving into terrorist demands. It was bribing them.
But what if they do it again and say, "Listen, give us more money then"?
Well, then that's a little bit different. But you know what? I see it as okay. So they're teenagers.
Yeah.
They are doing something that I personally do not have the capability of doing. And if, as long as their motives remain pure, it seems to be a kind of activism I can get.
No. The thing is, it isn't activism, though. They're doing it. Then they said they were doing it for the lulls, you know.
Yeah, see, that's where I start getting a little.
Here's what he exactly said, okay? This is Omari, who is a 16 or 17-year-old, and he says, "Microsoft and Sony are fucking retarded, literally monkeys behind computers. They would have better luck if they actually hired someone who knew what they were doing. Like, if they went around prisons and hired people who were convicted for stuff like this, they would have a better chance of preventing attacks. If I was working at Microsoft or Sony and had a big enough budget, I could totally stop these attacks. I'd buy more bandwidth, some specific equipment, and defend the credit. It's just about programming skill. With an attack of this scale, it could go up to the millions, but that's really no problem for Sony and Microsoft." You know, and then when he said, you know, well, what about these kids who were, you know, opening up their consoles for Christmas and couldn't get online? And he said, well, I don't know. The thing is that they're 16 or 17. And I hate to tell this to people who are 21 and under, but physically, your brain has not finished developing. Not even at 21. It takes a little bit longer. You know, I don't know. Here's the thing. You know what the punishment is for hacking in the United States? And it's worse than jail time, is that they don't let you use computers, period. You're locked off from them. I know.
See, now that's a plan I can get.
Here's the thing. If I'm not a hacker, right? Even if I was just a normal citizen, I would go crazy if I couldn't have my computer for like a month or even a week. I'm that weak, by the way. You know, it's sort of like Woody Allen telling his girlfriend that, you know, they take away your charge card and you tell them everything. You know, that's basically me. I'm a weak-willed. But, you know, that imagine them being in a minimum security prison and they're not allowed to use anything more sophisticated than a dumb cell phone. You know?
Yeah, I can kind of – that's why I'm not trusted with state secrets, frankly, because they would just cut off my internet access and I'll talk.
You know, but the thing is that their reasoning is sort of like, well, you left your pie on your windowsill. How can we not steal your pie? You left it on the windowsill to cool off, you know? I don't know.
But you know what? But at least they're... I don't approve, but at least they're doing something.
Here's the thing is that...
I kind of think that Sony and Microsoft need to be kind of called out on...
Well, with Microsoft?
And American business in general needs to be kind of called out on...
Well, there's very little
lack of server security.
Of service. I mean, you're basically, you know, glomming up the bandwidth. The thing about Microsoft is that they know better than to let their, you know, the really personal information be accessible. You know,
right?
Sony.
And isn't that part of what everyone's complaint is about? The South Korea attack. It's like this happened a year ago. You knew better.
Yeah, you know they're still not convinced it was actually South Korea. You know, I think there are some reports that it wasn't, you know, but...
Well, we've gone ahead and issued sanctions against
them. Yeah, I think we're...
Like, that happened yesterday.
And we're also shutting down their internet and their cell phone service. I mean, if it's not us, then some other hacker group. Something interesting was that there was a debate online on YouTube where three rival hacking groups called for a ceasefire after admitting the attack on Xbox and PlayStation gamers took it a notch too far. You don't say. So...
Yeah, like, don't... Like, stop screwing with the public if you're trying to make a point. Like, what did the kids who just got a new video game for Christmas ever do to you?
Oh, by the way, Mr. Omari was 22, so he sounds even stupider when he was talking. But, you know, it's funny because... Anonymous had something interesting to say. Anonymous, who is Kim Dulcom, said that the attack overshadowed the good work of hackers. And he said, I think that this attack on Christmas and on kids around the world, the hacker image has suffered. I think we should talk about the impact that this attack had on kids worldwide. And I want to make sure that we leave this call with some conclusions, agreements that this type of thing won't happen again. Hacking is the one thing taking down an entire gaming network when people just got their Christmas gifts is taking it a notch too far. So that was someone from Anonymous. And Anonymous has basically started thinking of itself and acting like a consumer service sort of thing in which, you know...
Well, good for them.
I mean, like, you know, when something peeves them off, mainly liberal causes, right? They're the ones who released all the information from the Westboro Church, here, if you recall. And I would be asked.
I was unaware.
Yeah, they released all the data, the addresses. Not that it was, you know, some of it was dated, but some of it wasn't. You know, I would bet you that Anonymous is the one who are hacking the North Korean internet thing. I don't know.
I don't know. Anonymous seems to take a lot of credit for the stuff.
But you know what? Here's the thing: is that when they get older, I think their perspective will shift. And they'll start thinking about this, about doing this sort of stuff as a crime and not as, you know, as something else. You know, when they start realizing that, you know, when they start attaching faces to the people they're hurting.
Well, that's definitely a valid point. But I also think that it is young people. It is the students and the artists and the young people who start a revolution.
Unfortunately, well,
and we're probably going to have one. And we're probably going to have one somewhere.
Well, here's the problem, is that a lot of these hackers are also sociopaths, you know. And by the way, sociopath is not a disease.
Well, who isn't a sociopath these days?
You know, loners who have no friends and they just lash out at the world. You know, it has nothing to do with justice or anything like that. You know, and, you know, that's a problem. So, I mean, well, there is no easy answer. Just stop it. You know, if you have a target someone else. Who you know? Let's because when you take down Xbox Live and PlayStation Network, you're basically being bullies to kids who are actually playing games. You know, they want to play their games, they want to play their Halos, they want to go online, they want to do, you know, their stuff, and you know you're not letting them. And I don't think, you know, and I think they realize that they're not exactly getting a lot of sympathy here.
Yeah, but at the same time, we're living in a world where there are no easy answers.
Well, the one thing I will say, though, is that these guys are basically harmless, you know, because there's a lot more serious crap that can happen if you have some really serious bad intentions, you know. I mean, this, you know, shutting down, you know, doing denial of service attacks against online services, that's basically taking away a child, you know, a lolly, you know, taking candy away from a baby, you know. There are hackers who are hired by governments who might do more serious things, is what I'm saying.
Right. So, you know what? If the petty threats are succeeding this badly, maybe these companies need to start taking a look at their security a little bit more closely. They shouldn't be at a point where a foreign government can hack them so easily and make national news. Yeah. Over a petty movie. Could you imagine and nothing about, you know, the film in particular is what I want to get into, but could you imagine if it was an all out act of war?
Well, some considered it an act of war, by the way.
Exactly. Absolutely.
If it really was North Korea, you know.
Our government has said that it was. I'm going to operate under the assumption that they're not lying to
us. Here's the thing, though. Was it a war against the United States? Because it was more of a war against Sony, who's based in Japan.
They do a great deal of their business in the United States.
I guess, but, you know.
And it was about an American film. So, yeah, I would venture to say it was if it's to be viewed as an act of war, it should be viewed as an act of war against America. But I kind of think we're getting outside of our realm of expertise here.
I'm just getting tired of this story, basically. I just wanted to, you know, wishing it go away is, you know, foolish. But I do want it to just go away, you know. Just have these kids grow up, you know, maybe have kids of their own if it's possible.
Oh, God, no.
Well, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this is the article that I said that you might have some personal connection to. If I remember your nationality right, that is.
Yeah, I am all ears.
GSC Game World reopens for business. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. GSC Game World, the developer of Stalker and Cossack series, imploded in 2010, having already endured rocky treatment from publishers and fans after the release of Clear Sky and Call of Pripyat. Things got rapidly messy when several parties laid claim to both the Stalker IP and many of the assets which were currently in production at GSC. GSC was shut down among rumors of the Ukrainian government attempting to seize control of the developer. Vostok Games, 4A, and West Games rose from the ashes of GSC. Now GSC is back and looking to start afresh. Valentin Yedishev, you're the Ukrainian here. You probably have better luck with Eastern European names. Okay, part of the original GSC team and spokesperson for the studio's return, spoke in an interview with Games Industry Biz. When asked about the shutdown of GSC Game World, Yeltsyshev replied, We realized that Stalker 2 was different. It was going to take too much time. By the time it was ready, we were definitely going to be out of date. We had scenarios all written by the guy who did the original Stalker, but that's just a scenario, not a full game. We were closer to the beginning of development than the end. The X-Ray engine was quite ahead of its time, but only in 2007, not 2010. The new engines in Call of Duty and Battlefield had started to arrive, so we needed to get better. It was maybe 70 to 80% ready. It was a huge step from X-Ray. It was oriented on PC and Xbox 360, and there were plans to work on it for PlayStation eventually. There were also problems getting interest and with the right money from publishers. We were offered funding once we reached Alpha. Actually, we would have been able to fund the entire development ourselves, but we still weren't sure we'd be able to sell it once we got to Alpha. On the viability of their unannounced game, Yetlishev stated, "We're pretty sure about our fans. The market we're in is quite old-fashioned. They're not 16-year-olds. They're 25 to 40 years old. We don't think free-to-play is the right model for the game we want to make." When asked, The interviewer asked, "It's not been an easy time for Ukrainian developers, or indeed the Ukraine in general. We've already seen 4A open a new studio in Malta. Were you tempted to move elsewhere?" Yetlishev replied, "No, we're staying here. It's a hard time for Ukraine, but it's good to be. But it's a good time to be proud to be Ukrainian."
I agree with that.
So let's go back a little bit here, talking about. I don't know if you've experienced this, but when you're working on a game, right? And you haven't worked on games that were, you know, tremendously technically, you know, like they had to have special engines and all that, you know, or at least. Mm-hmm. But there was a concern that, you know, if you wait too long, whatever concept you're doing will be dated, and then you're going to be releasing a game that's, you know, behind the times. So.
Yeah, I, you know, I have worked on some extremely time-sensitive
stuff. Oh, yeah, like the U.S. thing.
most notably for the Olympic team. So, yeah, I mean, just the added level of pressure. And, you know, I have complete confidence that if it looked like we weren't going to get our game launched in time, then the Olympic team would have pulled the plug on the pin trading game that we did for them, and you know maybe they would revisit it in a year or two. But like there's an Olympics to contend with every other year. But yeah, I mean, if you have a hard date to hit for a reason like that, and you're not going to do it, you should pull the plug as soon as you like realize that and move on to the next project.
You know, they actually,
I mean, otherwise you're just throwing good money after bad.
Actually, a little bit off track here, but do you think that the U.S. Olympic Committee is going to have you do a new Pinterest pin game?
I have no comment.
I'll take that as a maybe. the other thing is that they're also able to recognize their market. You know, they said that the people that they're doing it for aren't 16. It's more for a slightly older gamer from 25 to 40, you know. And I think recognizing your demographic is extremely important. You know, movies can attempt, and they often fail too, to make something that's for everybody. But, you know, when you make something that's for everybody, it becomes for nobody.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, know your audience is fantastic advice.
Yeah. And also, it is a rough time in the Ukraine, and I'm right when I think you're Ukrainian, right? Okay. Yeah. So
I am a proud Ukrainian American.
Yeah.
First generation.
So, you know, you have a developer.
My mama was off the boat.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that GSC Game World was a major developer in Europe, you know, not just the Ukraine, but in Europe. And, you know, it was strange a couple of years ago when it was reported that the Ukrainian government was trying to seize, you know, GSC Game World, and part of it was because of Chernobyl. That was odd, you know.
Well, I have no background on what happened there, so I'm gonna save myself the embarrassment of commenting. But I will say a much more general statement that I'm really happy to hear of game companies forming overseas. I think that we get a lot of American focused ideals and content in our American video.
Well, yeah,
games.
I mean, you know, these guys wrote what they knew. They did a game about Chernobyl and being in a post-apocalyptic Russia, you know.
Right. And like I'm kind of over, you know, I've been playing such things for like over 25 years, and I'm kind of over, like, you know, the Western European, you know, feudalism, medieval type hero with sword kind of thing. I mean, I would kind of like to see some other mythologies brought to light. I mean, what are the fascinating stories that are being told for generations in, you know, India and Africa? And we're not going to get those in our games until, you know, foreign companies are formed and make games off of their experience and bring those kinds of mythologies to the rest of the world. Mm. You know, like I'm kind of overloaded on Greek and Roman gods. You know, it's just like I've been into them since I was a kid, and I am only now realizing how little content there is for other things.
You know, there's only one or two games I can think of that were Norse god mythology, and I'm not talking I'm not talking about oh damn, what was that failed Xbox game, Too Human. I'm not thinking of Too Human, even though I'm talking about, like, there was Rune, you know, which was a Norse mythology thing. And also, I'm not thinking of Thor either, you know, nothing having to do with Marvel or Thor. That's not what I'm thinking
of. because at this point Marvel's version of Thor, it doesn't count as Norse mythology. Like, that just counts as Marvel. Like, that just counts as an American viewpoint on that.
Well,
subject.
Like, let's think of, you know, how many games do you know of that dealt with, say, Baba Yaga? You know,
one maybe, and I saw it at E3. That's one of the more. That's my point. I mean, one of the more prolific myths of Ukrainian culture
and Russian culture altogether, really.
Yeah, I mean, in that whole Slavic region, and you know, we have, you know, When was the last time you heard that character mentioned in a movie? Or like any or a video game ever?
Well, I mean, there are I know that the Vorkosigan saga you know talks about Russian myths like Baba Yaga. You know, it's a science fiction novel. I also know that Heroes of Might and Magic series also had that chicken-legged house, which is basically Baba Yaga's house, but you know, it's never said that it's Baba Yaga.
You know, so let's, for anyone who's not familiar, Baba Yaga is a character from Ukrainian and Russian folklore. She's a witch who lives in, you know, kind of similar to, you know, Hansel and Gretel, but she has many stories told about her. And she lives, she always characteristically lives in this house that walks around on giant chicken and legs so she can appear wherever she wants.
And I think
to.
She rides a mortar. She doesn't ride a brute.
She rides in a cauldron. With a cauldron pushed through the sky with a broom, or a mortar and pestle, which she uses to fly across the sky. But yeah, it's a fascinating character.
You know,
there's actually Columbia actually did an entire semester long course just about her.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans are familiar with a film called Morozkov, which was retitled Jack Frost in the United States. And even though the names are all changed, the witch character is Baba Yaga. So,
neat.
So if you ever want to see something called Morozkov or Jack Frost MST3K, that's basically the Baba Yaga mythology there with Yvonne as the guy who turns into a bear. Like I said, you know, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be Slavic. I mean, it could be, you know, how many African myths do we discuss are in video games or literature or anything like that?
Right. That's exactly my point. You know, the one African story, and I don't even know if it is African, that leaps to mind is on Reading Rainbow back in the day. There was a story about the boy on Kapiti Plain who brought rain to the savannah.
Right. So,
and I was like, I that's the only one I could think of. And what do you want to bet that was written by an American and totally not even like actual folklore?
I mean, there are some like the why the mosquito doesn't buzz in your ear, that sort of thing, you know. I mean, there's some stories that, you know, there's a lot of rich material that's out there that, you know, I'll give you another thing. There was a game called, an MMO called Dark Age of Camelot, right? And everybody knew about Arthurian myth. That was one part of it. And they also had the Norse myth in the other part. But they also included as a third faction Hibernian myth, right? And people don't know anything about Irish mythology. I mean, they know about the Druids, but the Druids weren't Irish, for one thing. But, you know, I mean, Hibernia and all of that stuff, you know, Tir na n'og, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. And, you know, we went way off topic here talking about, about.
Well, no, I mean, we're examining,
right.
We're lamenting the, you know, the sad lack of international viewpoints.
But, you know, GSC is ignoring geopolitical issues and just staying in the Ukraine to make games there, you know? So,
well, good for them.
So, let me ask you a question. Would you ever go to the Ukraine and develop there? If you were...
Oh, my goodness. They'd have to pay me... They'd have to pay me an awful lot of money to move internationally. Like, anybody would have to pay me an awful lot to move internationally.
But do you speak the language?
I do not.
Oh, see, that's the big...
I know, my family does. I just never picked it up. I am not a person who is gifted with the with the ability to learn languages.
Neither am I.
I mean, I took 6 years of Italian in school because I had to, and I basically can only ask where the bathroom is.
Yeah, French is my thing. Okay, sir.
Like, that was such a struggle.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Where am I? Xbox Live Founder.
No. Halo 5.
Halo 5 multiplayer beta gets more maps, weapons, and modes, and this comes to us from GameSpot. Halo 5 Guardians multiplayer beta is getting new maps, weapons, and modes, developer 343 Industries has announced. In each round of the new multiplayer mode, Breakout, each Spartan only has one life. The first team to win 5 rounds wins the match, which you can play on either the Crossfire map or its variant, Trench. The new maps, Regent and Eden... Regret and Eden will be added to the to the Slayer playlist. Regret is a remix of Truth, and Eden is a remix of Empire, both of which included in the first week of beta. Additionally, quote, you voted and we answered. You'll be able to wield the Hydra MLRS, a brand new weapon to the Halo universe, while slaying on regret, 343 Industries said. On Twitter, Halo 5 multiplayer designer Quinn Delhio added that the light rifle will make its debut in this update as well. The rifle, quote, has received some modifications since Halo 4 and is now more of a Tier 2 weapon. DeHalo said, according to a post on Xbox Wire, the Halo 5 Guardians multiplayer beta will get even more new content next week. In other Halo 5 news, Microsoft and 343 Industries recently announced $100 and $250 collector's editions of
the game. Okay, a little disclosure.
They're paying you for this spot.
No, right? I pre-ordered the $250 collector edition.
Of course you did.
And that's as much as a Nintendo 3DS. You know, I do plan to get a Nintendo 3DS, by the way, at some point.
I love my 3DS, by the way. I took it with me to Palm Springs.
Oh, I enjoy it. I love my DS when I was using it. You know, I just stopped using it. And now, you know, I'm getting the urge. You know, maybe I want to, you know, play the new Pokemon, you know, because I do like the game, even though they never change it. Jeez, get some upgrades. I mean, having two fighters, having two Pokemon fight, that's not a big enough change to the formula. But anyway.
Oh, please. Do you know what I'm seeing this week? I'm seeing people want a re-release of the original Red, Blue, and Television versions of the Pokemon game on 3DS.
Didn't they?
Did they? I don't think so.
Maybe it was on the GBA. It was probably on the GBA. They had Leaf Green and, you know, something like that. You know, they had one of those, not Leaf Green, but, you know, Ruby Red and, you know.
Yeah, but they wanted on Game Boy Advance, that was decades ago.
Yeah. So the reason why this item intrigues me is, for one, it's, you know, this is very important for Microsoft. I mean, basically, all those sales, you know, leading the past 2 months for the Xbox One was for, I think for one reason, aside from the price drop, but people need their Halo fix, you know, and
some people need their Halo fix.
Okay, let me put it this way: gamers, you know, Microsoft gamers need their Halo fix, right?
Microsoft gamers need their Halo fix.
Or people who buy both the PlayStation and the you know, there are people who buy more than one console, right?
But people. Gee, I wonder what those kind of people must be like.
Like, I haven't bought a PlayStation 4. I'm spending my money on buying 4K TVs instead. So here's the thing, you know. But I'm talking about gamers who are into shooters, or you know that, you know, the core.
Yes, absolutely. Halo is without a doubt one of the top three first person shooters on the market. Always has been.
You know. Action gamers. Let's call them not even shooters, just action gamers. You know, people who like action in their games. It's very important for Microsoft because this is what drives Microsoft sales.
Oh, absolutely.
Halo is one of the most influential games in video game history, if only because it was the sole reason that a console was able to survive. You know?
I would definitely put it in one of the top 20.
Xbox would have just vanished without Halo. It would have been.
I absolutely would put it in one of the top 20. I can't agree with you more.
I would put it a little higher, you know. And it has nothing. Let me put it. It has nothing to do, Paul, with how good it is, or you know. I'm talking about just as a game that moves machines. I'm not talking about whether you like it or not. I'm talking about.
No, I would even take it a step further. It's a high quality game. The Halo as a franchise IP recognition case study. Has a fantastic amount of cachet behind it.
Okay, but
it means, you know, quality entertainment, and I definitely think that it's one of the top 20 games of all time.
Microsoft needs this. That's basically my point. Microsoft.
Oh yes.
You know, big time.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. The other thing is that once again, they're doing one of the reasons why Halo is so beloved by the people who played it and enjoyed it is that. The developers of the game are really in touch with the people who play it. You know, the gamers, the consumers, right?
It's another example of knowing your audience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not co-development, but it's more like we're going to do this, and you know, we're going to see what you want because we want to see. You know, I mean, there's a lot of. My vocabulary sucks today.
Well, the holidays will do that
between the two. Let me put it that way. So, you know, they're playing, you know, and this is how you get customer brand loyalty, you know? I mean, that
you consistently deliver high quality product.
Well, not only that, but you also give people, you know, you let people know that, you know what they want, you know, and you converse with them. You know, Nintendo did that a lot in the early 80s and late 80s, early 90s, which is why there's such a strong bond with Nintendo players and the company, you know, because, you know, they had Nintendo power, and you should know because you own every single issue.
I'm actually missing a few, so I'm going to have to go and find them somewhere to complete my collection.
There's a Nintendo thief out there. Anyways, but, you know.
I know, right?
I mean, the Nintendo Club was massive for Nintendo back in the day, you know.
Oh, yeah. They did huge amounts of player outreach.
You know, giving away free games for doing stuff, you know.
Oh, my God. That was clearly the best. A free copy of Dragon Warrior with your subscription to Nintendo Power. But everybody had a copy. It was awesome.
But that's how you get customer loyalty. So that's what
Yeah, you make people feel appreciated. You give them quality products. You listen to them.
That's basically what's happening here, you know, and that's what Microsoft's trying to do. And they have to do this because they came out of the gate slow. You know, they made a lot of mistakes, you know.
Yeah, I definitely would support the thought that the PS4 has done more market penetration than either of its two competitors.
And the thing is, you know, there's a story that I didn't use, but people are upset that having their accounts hacked yet again, Sony's response is to give them 10% off, a coupon for 10% off PlayStation Network sales.
Not acceptable.
Because basically all you're saying is, well, you know what? You can, here's our apology. You can buy some of our stuff.
buy our stuff.
You know, if they had given actual money, like everybody who got hacked $10, of course that would, I don't know how many. That would be like...
Not even. Oh. Just give them a freaking $10 credit towards a game that they can download.
Okay. Yeah. But still, you know, I mean, you know...
Because then, that increases sales. That lets everybody feel like they got something of value because they might have been planning to download it anyway. It could translate into just a PR cost because that could just be absorbed in some other budget line item. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different ways to handle things like that they really should consider because, I don't know, I think people are getting a little pissed off at Sony.
Well, you know, so the thing is, you know, they have to be careful, Sony, because they could, you know, if they don't play it right.
They could blow their lead, frankly.
Not in this generation, but, you know, next generation, they may, you know, when people are looking for a new console, they may have... You know, if you don't give them a reason to buy your new stuff.
I don't know. The Amiga stuff is selling hardware.
The Amiga?
The Amiibo? How the hell do you say that? The Nintendo figures for Smash Brothers.
You know, I mean,
if they come out with more pervasive software.
Yeah, I saw that you can use them with Super Smash Brothers Wii U.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Huh. It's kind of like Nintendo's version of Infinity or Skylanders, and it works for only games on their
Activision
system.
Reek. 3 years ago, is it E3, or is it maybe 2 years ago, and Skylanders first appeared. They had a funny little introduction in which they came out of the ground and smoke and all that. And I said, oh, ha, 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 toys. And all of a sudden,
they have created a new market.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, that's – and it's absolutely disrupt. It has the potential to be nearly as disruptive as Rock
Here's
Band.
Here's the thing.
I was gonna say the iPhone, but I scaled it back. The possibility to be as big as Rock Band.
They married toys with video games, something that people have been trying to do for the past 20 years.
Oh yeah, I mean going back to Rob.
You know,
I mean Rob had different goals, but that's, you know, besides the point.
I have Rob. He's sitting there.
Yeah, Rob was never intended to be successful.
No, but here's the thing.
Or well supported.
You know what the next big thing is going to be, right? In that vein.
What?
When you have posable action figures that you can do with like you do a figurine, except this time it's posable and you can play with it.
Oh my God! You make it posable, and unlocking the right stance for the figure gives you extra powers.
That's a good idea. You know,
that's absolutely.
Hey, Activision, Nintendo, that was our idea. So if you use it, you have to pay us for it.
yeah, no, screw that. Hire Paul, and you get the idea for free.
You hear that?
I will lead the charge on that project for you, and it will be
Paul amazing. Is a whore. He just wants you to
Paul is a professional video game designer. I don't think we mentioned that enough on this program.
And whore. Let's kidding.
Well, really, I do kind of sell my art. So in that sense, I suppose.
We're going to leave it right there on that item. So yeah, Halo 5 important. Okay, moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
I just read. It's your turn.
Oh, that's right. Xbox Live founder leaves Microsoft, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Boyd Muldaur, the man who created Xbox Live and XNA at Microsoft, is leaving the company after 17 years of service. He confirmed his departure on Twitter, taking the time to thank well-wishers. Quote, goodbye, Microsoft. It was a good run. Xbox was great. Time to do something new. Love all the people saying XNA changed their careers and lives. Glad to have helped people to find the joy in computer science. He didn't reveal what his next project would be, but did suggest interested parties keep an eye on his personal blog. Does that sound like to me, listen, if you like my idea, you know, you can buy it. You can buy it from me. Muldaur joined Microsoft in March of 1997 and departs as the partner director of development for Xbox. He had a huge impact on brand overseeing technical design and development of all software on the Xbox One and Xbox 360 and for external developers through the XNA tools. Paul, did you ever have to work with XNA?
I have not, fortunately. Just one more thing to learn.
Yeah, the thing about this is that Xbox Live changed everything when it came to consoles. I mean, there was internet with consoles, but it was basically rudimentary. Microsoft took their knowledge of, you know, of software and design and interfaces and all that. And now, you know, Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, and the Nintendo eShop, you know, they're now in a very important part of consoles, which wasn't the case, you know, like 10 years ago. You know, people having...
Well, I'd like to think that the internet had something to do with that, too.
Yeah, but, you know, Microsoft had a big part of that as well. See, they used their knowledge because the thing about Sony and Nintendo, they're hardware. Microsoft is all about software, right? Which is why Sony and Nintendo still have problems with their internets, you know.
Well, you know what they say. Xbox is the new water cooler.
Yes, but, you know, I just want to point out his importance in, you know, in recent video game history. And also, you know, I'm pretty sure you like anybody who creates a software tool to make games and
oh my God, anything that makes my job easier, I am all
and
for
also
it.
Well, my point was that, you know, he introduced, you know, he got younger people to get into software development, you know, and you know, having more young people join the field, you know, so I mean, the more creative minds you have in this industry, the better.
Absolutely. Yep.
Anyway, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
From Alpha Shard, Merry Christmas, guys. At the patch for AC Unity, they really do need to stop rushing games out that aren't finished. A positive is that at least they addressed the issue. I never understood the need to rush a game before it was done. The people wanting to buy it are still going to do so, even if you need a few more months to fix things. It does look pretty bad if you have to redo the whole game that's already been shipped. At Blizzard Gold for Time, it does sound like a nice idea for players to pay for their time with the in-game money. The article did have in it its quote that it would cover some of the cost. I'm sure they will limit how much gold you can give, so it's not an entire free month. I'm sure someone will find a way to abuse this, though. Yeah, I think they might do, like, you can only redeem, like, 1 or 2 months out of the year. That would probably be the way I would go with it. It's kind of like buy, you know, subscribe for 10 months, and you can get the 11th and 12th months free. But whatever. At Hatred, games like this always make me uneasy. Where there is a line between between being artistic and trying to get people to experience things and just being gratuitous because you want to be. Should games like Custard's Last Stand be allowed on Steam along with those Nazi games that Jonah mentioned?
I think Jonah, you say about Custer's Revenge, which was that porno game on the Atari 2600.
Yeah, but the graphics on that were probably going to be horrific. I think Jonah does have a point with the consequences. If you are shown that it is not acceptable behavior, maybe even go so far as to show just how those actions affect the lives of victims. I just feel Hatred is more about the killing than trying to get you to see how terrible a thing that is. At least in Grand Theft Auto V, when you did the torture scene, you were given a speech about how useless and terrible such an act is. You are haunted by the, yeah, you are hunted by the police when you get wanted ratings, and you are shown consequences for your actions.
You know, there are games like, you know, like Postal. It makes it really obvious from the very start this is a parody and not to be taken seriously, right? And a game like Hotline.
Right, but I think what he's saying is that there's a difference between artistic parody and a moralistic lesson.
You know, like you have Gary Coleman in the game. I mean, the other thing
is. Well, who doesn't love Gary Coleman? Wait, is he dead?
Yes, he died a while ago. But we still.
Well, who doesn't love Gary Coleman?
And then you have Hotline Miami, in which you do some really, really, really sick things. But the entire point of that game is to, you know, make you feel uneasy, right? Right. And that's the thing with Hatred. You have to wonder if the entire point is to make you feel uneasy or just to give you your fantasy of being a mass serial murderer and get away with it without any, you know. I mean, basically it's a horde mode, but instead of monsters, you have civilians and police, you know. So, like I said, in the end, it's all up to the consumer. I mean, you know, no one's going to buy that neo-Nazi game in which you put Jews into the gas chambers, right?
Well, neo-Nazis might. Neo-Nazis might, but are they a big enough
market? That's what I mean. You know, I mean, so, like I said, you know, I won't buy it, you know, but, you've said this before yourself, you know, it's up to the consumer to decide if they want to buy it or not, you know.
And, you know, not for nothing, it's also up to the priorities of a game maker. I went to school and am friends with a young man who one of his primary goals in life is to, you know, glorify God through the use of video games. So he has specifically made a career choice to work on Christian video games.
The thing is, you have to make them good. I mean, the Catechumen, which I reviewed, which is basically really bad. You know, and the message was tortured. I mean, for something like that, I would tell your friend to you should try adventure games because it's better to give a message without seeming stupid, you know?
Right. I mean, this is someone with a master's degree in video game design.
So yeah, I mean, adventure games.
He kind of knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I mean, you have these.
Shout out to you, Daniel.
Don't do that Noah's Ark game. You know, those two.
He had to review NES
games.
He had to review those games. He had to go buy copies of them for his thesis.
Okay, well, guess what? Then he knows what not to do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, anyways, moving on.
In the same way, I know how to make content that appeals to the non-traditionally heterosexual game player.
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you a question. Are you going to make an LGBT game?
If the opportunity ever arises.
Mm. Okay. So, moving on.
At the last question of the week, I'd like to choose Taresk from Dungeons & Dragons, the ultimate middle finger to players when the DM wants to tell them they are really screwed. This mammoth is roughly the size of Mount Everest, spews acid, has massive claw bite tail damage, and does he's the Godzilla of
Mystical Okay, time
Realms.
Out. I know what the Taresk is, and it is not a mammoth. It is basically a giant, I would like to say lizard?
Well, he was saying mammoth in size, not...
No, mammoth is the size of Mount Everest. I think you're saying about the animal. It's more like a lizard, sort of, with a horn, or maybe a rhinoceros. A cross between a lizard and a rhinoceros that's really, really big. By the way, you can kill it, but it's impossible. It's almost impossible to do. I mean, the thing is that it just rampages around and it causes destruction, then it goes back to sleep.
Well, anytime there's a dragon, I always tense up. That's just me.
Well, do you...
Vampire dragons can often be the worst.
Oh, what about... well, actually, I... You know, there are fairy dragons, which can be a real bitch.
There are fairy dragons.
Not fairy as in that connotation. I mean fairy as in fairy. Like your fairy MMO.
That's homophobic.
I'm pretty sure there are gay dragons, too. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, Paul.
Yeah, but you shouldn't call them fairies.
I'm not calling them fairies. I'm calling these fairies as in mystical butterfly-winged creatures.
Yes, I am quite familiar with fairy dragons. I'm just busting your chops.
Okay, moving on. This week's question of the week.
Oh. At this week's question of the week, yes, I have used Humble Bundle. I'm glad it has helped raise so much money.
Okay. So the question of the week, is sort of related to our last news item. How much do you play online? And I'll answer first. I don't play much online anymore. And it's not because I don't like people online. It's just that the games I've been playing and the games I've been enjoying don't lend themselves to online play anymore. I might start playing Halo 5, you know, the beta. I think that might be the extent of it.
I, on the other hand, do not at all care for online gameplay. Most of the time, I don't like playing with strangers.
Let me ask you a question. When you play a game that's asymmetrically multiplayer online, you know, like a Facebook game in which people contribute to your thing, but you're not there, you know, they, you know, like The Sims Online and that sort of stuff, do you consider that playing online, or do you consider that just people just happen to be around, you know? Stuff
I don't think that that's what we mean when we say play games online. And I
that's
don't really
definition.
Ever consider it. Yeah, like, well, technically, I guess we are online when we play.
Yeah, okay, so you mean active playing with other people in real time.
Right. Although I will say that I enjoy asynchronous, as you said, you know, I do enjoy asynchronous social and mobile play. I've also been enjoying the hell out of downloading other people's toy boxes. Oh my God, one of them was insane. One of them was so good. It was someone recreated, I was going to say this guy, but that was incredibly sexist of me. Someone recreated an entire living room to scale with your character as like the toy size. Mm. Yeah, so it was fantastic. I mean, like the power cords to get up onto counters, they used rail riders like Ratchet and Clank. It was awesome. And you ran around trying to get inside this video game cabinet so you can climb to the top and play Space Invaders. It was awesome.
You get to rate this user content? Like, you give it 5 stars?
I
really?
I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that it was approved by Disney's reviewers.
Well, Disney's only looking to see if there's any copyright violation. That's all they – or no penises. Or, you know, that's all they care about. No copyright infringement and no penises.
No, they've put it in their – they've put it in one of their top 20.
Oh, okay. So they're sort of like
so they do have an additional level of content review.
Yeah, so the, for
that,
more professional,
you know, that is more than just profanity or personal identifying information.
Right. Are you going to make any content?
I just started playing it a week ago, so I'm having trouble deciding what I want to do. Hmm. Like, I'd like to. I'm waiting for a wave of inspiration. Plus, kind of, I got to be honest, it's like what I do for a living.
Yeah, but, you know,
I don't really want to, like, do work sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's some stuff that isn't work, you know, that doesn't feel like work.
Right. But since I do that for a living, this would feel awfully similar to work.
Well.
So I'm just waiting for when I get an idea that I like enough to take on a side job.
Okay. Anyway, the question of the week was, how much do you play online? Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. And also with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum. Or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us in iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. And yeah, the iTunes part is more important.
Yeah, the iTunes part is more important.
So anyways, so we hope you had a happy new year. And also, oh, you know, that's the other question of the week. What goodies did you get for the holiday season? You know, let us know what goodies.
Oh, yeah. What'd you get for Christmas?
Well, not everybody celebrates
Infinity,
Christmas. That's
awesome.
Why I'm saying for the holiday season.
Well, I mean, I'm an ethnocentric bastard. There, I said it.
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. You let us know. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.